Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
President Trump held a rally in Orlando, Florida tonight to officially launch his re-election campaign. You're launching your re-election campaign? You've been running for re-election since your second day in office. You talk about 2020 more than a guy who just got LASIK.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, you'll hear Seth's interview with the minds behind the new HBO show, Los Espookies, Julio Torres, Anna Fabrega, and Fred Armisen. Plus, they stick around for a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
President Trump sat down for a rare interview with a network that wasn't Fox News. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump almost never does interviews with anyone other than a friendly outlet, like, for example, Fox and Friends. In fact, he just did one with them on Friday, where they kicked off the interview with this hard-hitting exchange.
It is the president's birthday.
The president
as well.
Is turning 73 today, and he is joining us by phone right now. Good morning to you, Mr. President.
Good morning.
Happy birthday. How do you plan to celebrate?
Well, I think I'll just work, if you want to know when
nope.
you say celebrate.
Right,
you got to have a cake or something.
Celebrate.
What about a cake?
Yeah, we'll have a little piece of cake tonight.
They talk about him like he's a child. The president turned 73 today, and that's why we're doing our show live on location from Chuck E. Cheese. So that is right there. That's the kind of interview Trump's used to. Also, you can see why, because when Trump sat down with ABC anchor George Stephanopoulos, he was tripped up by even the simplest questions. For example, Trump has blocked Democrats in Congress from reviewing his financial records. In the ABC interview, Trump tried to claim there was nothing suspicious in those records, but he couldn't get past the fact that his chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, who was in the room, was coughing during his answer.
They're after my financial statement, the Senate. They'd like to get my financial statement. At some point, I hope they get it.
You're going to turn it over?
No, at some point, I might. But at some point, I hope they get it, because it's a fantastic financial statement. It's a fantastic financial statement. And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Get a shot of, and I'll come over here.
You just can't.
Just to change the shot.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, do you want to do that a little differently then?
Yeah, we just changed the angle.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
So at some point, I look forward to, frankly, I'd like to have people see my financial statement.
Just remember that the next time Donald Trump says he has a great health care plan, the plan is, if you cough, get the out of here. Now, it's not that I feel bad for Mick Mulvaney, but you know there's a pretty good chance they set up the cough as a signal and Trump forgot.
If I accidentally start saying I want Congress to see my financial records, you know, give me some kind of signal, something simple like a cough.
Sure, but won't a cough be distracting?
No, a cough is great. I mean, it's not like I'm gonna lose my mind when I hear a cough.
Also, I love that Trump thinks his answer was so good that the coughing ruined it. Dude, you'd be better off if every answer you gave was interrupted by coughing. Like, what, for example, what does this mean?
They'd like to get my financial statement. At some point, I hope they get it.
You won't give it to them, but you hope they get it? What does that mean? Are you playing hard to get?
Oh, you want my financial statement? Well, it's right here. Chase me. Chase me. Yeah.
But the fun part of this interview was watching Stephanopoulos set Trump up by tossing him a few softballs that were right in his wheelhouse in order to warm him up, and then hitting him with the tough questions. For example, there was a part where Stephanopoulos greeted Trump in the morning and asked him how much sleep he got, and the conversation veered into which meals Trump likes the most.
How much sleep? Probably I average 4 or 5 hours, I guess.
Are you a big breakfast guy?
I'm not a breakfast guy at all, fortunately. No. I like the lunches, but the dinners is what I really like.
Now that's the kind of interview Trump likes to give. He wants you the same questions you'd ask while FaceTiming with your grandpa in his retirement home. How was your birthday, Grandpa? Did you have breakfast? Oh, you like dinner more? That's great. Is someone coughing in the background? Oh, everyone's coughing. Okay. Also, by the way, how predictable is it that Trump is anti-breakfast? Of course Trump is against the most important meal of the day.
I don't like to front-load my energy. I like to fill up my belly at night and have a fitful sleep so I wake up nice and paranoid.
But this is how you rope-a-dope Trump. You bring the rope, he brings the dope. You soften him up with a dumb question like this to get him going, and then you hit him with a tougher one about something like the Mueller report. And when Stephanopoulos did that, Trump was clearly thrown off kilter.
If you answer these questions to me now, why not answer them to Robert Mueller under oath?
Because they were looking to get us for lies, for slight misstatements.
You didn't answer questions
people.
On obstruction.
Well, wait a minute. I did answer questions. I answered them in writing.
Not on
I don't
obstruction.
Know about those. I don't know. I answered a lot of questions. They gave me questions. I answered them in writing.
Not on obstruction.
Look, George, you're being a little wise guy, okay? Which is, you know, typical for you.
Did you just call him a little wise guy? Did you also tell him to go home and get his shine box? Every time you think Trump couldn't sound more like a Scorsese character, he finds a way. This interview should have had a voiceover from Henry Hill.
Why not answer them to Robert Mueller under oath?
I knew they were cops. Only cops talk that way. They had been wise guys. I wouldn't have heard a thing.
Stephanopoulos also asked Trump about the evidence contained in the Mueller report that he obstructed justice. In fact, more than 1,000 former prosecutors signed a letter saying that there was enough evidence to indict Trump. But when Stephanopoulos asked Trump about that, Trump dismissed it.
Robert Mueller said he's not reaching a decision, could not exonerate you. And he laid out all that evidence. More than 1,000 former federal prosecutors.
Oh, that's, but they're all politicians. Hey, George, look, I know more about prosecutors than you'll ever know.
That doesn't sound as good as you think it sounds. That's like if you're watching Law & Order with a buddy and they go, see, his mistake was throwing the body in the river without weighing it down. You gotta weigh it down. Everybody knows that. And of course, Stephanopoulos also got Trump to make his shocking admission that if a foreign government offered him dirt on a political opponent, he would definitely take it.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening.
Wow, dude. You would have been better off if that answer had been interrupted by coughing.
Should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both.
Stop coughing. I'm good.
But in a way, it was was at least refreshing to finally get an honest confession from Trump, because before this interview, Trump was still pretending he had no interest in colluding with a foreign government. For one thing, there were the all-caps tweets screaming no collusion, and last week, Trump even lied to reporters and claimed the Mueller report had actually shown that his campaign rejected contacts from the Russian government. Trump made that comment while sitting next to the president of Poland, and he couldn't help but get him involved.
The Mueller report spoke. They were very disappointed. It said no collusion and no obstruction and no nothing. And in fact, it said we actually rebuffed your friends from Russia.
His friends? Why? Why are you dragging him into it? Are you trying to frame him?
I had nothing to do with Russia, but you should talk to this guy over here. He's guilty as hell.
So with all this going on, you'd be forgiven for not trusting Trump when it comes to Russia. And even if you put aside Trump's latest comments, there's all the damning evidence about his campaign's contacts with Russia, his constant praise for Vladimir Putin, and even how excited Trump is to see him. I mean, look at that. Even Putin seems kind of bummed to be with him. This looks like a family photo of a corny dad on a road trip with his goth teen. They should be at the Grand Canyon.
Can you at least smile for one picture? We drove 30 hours. I let you listen to your music in the camper.
Well, if you are concerned, apparently you're not alone. As we learned this weekend, even intelligence officials don't trust Trump with sensitive information when it comes to Russia.
The United States is reportedly ramping up cyber attacks on Russia's electric power grid. And the New York Times says potentially crippling malware has been placed deeper into the Russian grid than ever before.
This from the New York Times story. Two administration officials said they believe Mr. Trump had not been briefed in any detail. Pentagon intelligence officials described broad hesitation to go into detail with Mr. Trump about operations against Russia for concern over his reaction and the possibility he might countermand it or discuss it with foreign officials.
Wow, they can't even give the president of the United States sensitive details about Russia because they're afraid he'll blab about it to Putin. This is probably why Trump spends all of his time showing off new paint colors for Air Force One, because that's the only thing his aides trust him to do. That's why Putin looks so bummed in those photos. Do you have any classified secrets, Donald?
Oh, yeah, we're painting Air Force One red, white, and blue.
Trump keeps going on TV and giving us more evidence against him. Meanwhile, Democrats are having a weird debate over whether they should impeach him or focus on beating him in 2020. If anything, it seems like the answer is simple.
You do both.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guests are three very talented comedians who co-created and star in the new comedy series Los Spookies, which premieres Friday, June 14th on HBO. Please welcome to the show Julio Torres, Anna Fabrega, and Fred Armisen, everybody. Welcome, you guys. This show is fantastic. Congratulations. It is unlike anything I have ever seen. Fred, is it safe to say that the seed of the idea began with you?
Yeah, I wanted to do something mostly in Spanish and something about the love of horror in Latin America.
Gotcha. That was something you observed over the years, that in Latin America, horror is a genre that people...
Yeah, they love it. There's, like, a lot of goths there, and it was just a real scene.
And when he first brought this to you guys, did that click with you, the idea that horror was something that was important there?
I had said, I want nothing to do with Fred Armisen. No, yeah. Such a gift. Fred was like, do this show with us.
Is in Spanish, and Fred, I've heard you speak Spanish over the years, obviously, but then you've discovered on this shoot that people think you speak Spanish with an American accent.
Yeah, I mean, these guys pointed it out, too. Like, I thought I was fluent. Because around you, around all my friends, I'm like, I sound like I'm from Venezuela. And immediately, they're like, no, you have a thick American accent. Is that fair to say?
It hit us like a brick.
Are there certain words that Fred says that sounds like more American, like a Spanish word that has a thick American accent, or is it just all of them?
Internet.
Sofa.
Sofa.
Sofa. Internet.
How do you say internet?
Internet.
that's bad. Uh-huh. Yeah, even I could hear it there. Yeah.
Say sofa.
Sofa.
Yeah. You can kind of.
You can kind of hear. There is an air of the supernatural in this show, not just all the characters obsessed with horror, but there's a feeling of, like, telenovelas. Is that something you guys wanted to bring to it as well?
Yeah. So there's, I think, an eerie, weird quality to it that just sort of happened. I think it's just the only way we know how to write, maybe? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You guys met as comedians here in New York. Did you have any sense when you first met that you connected on the sort of ethereal, supernatural vibe that's now
in
the show?
I think that we like maybe like odd.
Odd things.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, but.
This was our first collaboration like this. And I mean, we knew and liked each other's work. And we were good friends, and when we started writing, it was we realized how big the middle of our Venn diagram was.
Yeah, you keep comparing our friendship to a Venn diagram.
Yeah. It makes it easy for me to understand.
It's easier for you to process, yeah. So on the outside of the Venn diagram, so like the eerie is in the inside.
Yeah, Los Spookies is the center.
Los Spookies in the center, and then I know you like cookies, and I don't, so that's another.
Yeah. Got it. You mentioned you like odd things. Your character has very odd jobs on the show. A thing that made me laugh very hard is you break in other people's shoes. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with the idea to play a character who walks around in uncomfortable shoes?
I knew I wanted to play someone who worked a lot of weird, really specific jobs and was trying to find the right job that made her feel whole and complete. And the jobs she gets are always short-lived, so she's constantly going from one to the other.
What do you do to fan? There's a fan-related job, right?
Yeah, she spins the blades of a fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see how that'd be short, though.
Because the motor is broken. We're not crazy.
Yeah. There's a reason doing that.
Oh, she's okay. That's a normal job, then. I'm sorry. Fred, you are a valet, and you have long wanted to play a valet.
Yeah, I love that outfit, you know, a red jacket and a tie. There's something about it. And, like, in L.A., they just, like, they run so much. They're just, like, with focus. And it seems like that's the occupation they want to do. They're very like, this is what I'm doing. I'm an adult. This is where I want to be. And I love it. I've just always wanted to play that.
And Julio, you are the heir to a chocolate fortune.
The heir apparent to a chocolate fortune.
Yeah. And how did this come from anything in your past that you thought would fit for this character?
Well, we like the idea of having chocolates that were blatant copyright infringement, because that happens a lot in Latin America. So in the show, we have Chocolates Charlie Wonka. based loosely on chocolates that I knew in El Salvador that were Chocolates Popeye, like Popeye, that truly tasted like dust. But then it was like, well, what does the family that owned these chocolates look like? And then I was like, okay, I want to play the descendant of that. Who is, like, a little bit of a, like, he's vampy, but also a little C-3PO, I think.
Yeah.
He's like a...
That's a very good description of what I've seen so
vampire
far.
Yeah. Robot, yeah.
You guys all have a different lineage, El Salvador, Panama, Venezuela. You shot in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And do you notice, like, the different ways people in different Spanish-speaking countries behave? Or is the language different to you?
Yeah, and it's also, like, Santiago is, like, very organized. It's not as, like, sort of tropical and crazy. It's, like, very sort of almost Germanic in its...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They feel very... It
feels like a European city.
Yeah. It's very orderly, very clean. It feels Canadian, right?
Yeah, idealistic.
It feels idealistic. Yeah. It feels because they are very proud about how efficient their city is.
Gotcha.
And then they can talk about, like, traffic laws for hours, I feel like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're very proud of their traffic laws?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of paperwork, too.
No traffic here. I think it's a coincidence.
Yeah.
Is the Spanish different? How does their Spanish sound? What is a Chilean Spanish accent?
Un poquito más aquí.
Is it? Como ya muchos consonants and hitting a lot of T's and P's pretty hard.
A lot of P's and P's really hard. Sí. Mira, Fred, si quieres, te llamo un carro para el restaurante. Pero el problema es que cierran a las 4 de la tarde.
Y ya son las 7.
Yeah.
We're going to do our very best to subtitle this.
Yeah.
I want to ask because I'm such a fan of your sketches on SNL. There's always a bit of fantasy to them as well.
Sure.
Is there? There's a wonderful moment in the second episode where a woman walks her fingers up a tiny staircase.
Yes.
You've had an obsession with tiny staircases.
Well, not more than the average person.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there's a sketch, not so much a sketch, but as a truth that I've been wanting to do for a long time, and for some reason it's never gained the traction that I believe it deserves. It's a commercial for a product that's called Tiny Little Stairs of about an inch high that you put next to your ear at night so your dreams can come out and dance.
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, bring
all
this.
These people would buy. It's not even
this,
a sketch. Yeah.
So now, so this isn't even a sketch. You mean it as
a
product.
I don't see anything funny.
Fortunately, the show is so very funny. I'm very excited for people to see it on Friday. Thank you all so much for being here. That's Julio Torres. That's Anna Fabrega. Fred Armisen. Los Spookies premieres June 14th on HBO.
Hey, this is Kevin from Late Night. We're backstage with Fred Armisen, Julio Torres, and Anna Fabrega, who are the co-creators of the HBO show Los Spookies. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Hi.
Thanks for sticking around for this brief podcast.
We were just on this show a couple minutes ago.
Mere minutes ago.
Yeah.
Seven minutes ago?
7 minutes.
Yeah. Would you say it's our first time on NBC together?
I would say that without hesitation.
I think we can very confidently say it is our first time at NBC together, unless you count just like walking down a hallway or something together, which might have happened.
First documented.
Yeah.
Have you guys performed? I mean, other than the show, obviously, have you ever performed stand-up shows or any performances together?
We did a few shows.
Yeah, but that was a few years ago. We have a few shows that we're going to do together.
Yeah.
It's probably on the internet if you Google it.
Yeah, Clusterfest, San Francisco.
Yeah.
Huge comedy festival.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've got a show in New York.
We've got a show in New York at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. On the 29th at Murmur, and in LA on the 18th.
These are June dates.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mark your calendars, everybody.
Thank God for Anna's calendar.
Yeah, I'm glad I had my phone here.
Yeah.
She has a calendar app on her phone.
I pay $3 a month for it.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not doing that.
Well, worth it.
Julio and Anna, you guys knew each other before you had met Fred?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then how did you all get involved with this project?
I was, or am, a fan of both of their work. And we'd been working on other stuff together. Anna and I did done some videos and stuff together. So once we got the project going, I just wanted to work with them as writers and performers and have them on the show. So it was one of those things where the answer was yes all the way through. Do you want to do this? I mean, I don't know if the wording was yes. Maybe it was sure.
It was an enthusiastic yes from both of us.
It was a fine.
Yeah, sure, I guess.
It was like, yeah, fine, when? Period. When is this? Uh-huh.
It's like, okay.
I'll see.
When do you want to do this? And what is this?
It's a group of friends who are horror fans in the show, and then it takes on this other surreal tone in the show. Where does that come from? How did that develop?
I think it just happened organically as we started writing. When we wrote the pilot, the idea was very kind of horror-based, and then once we started writing the rest of the series, it became more of this surreal aspect took over.
Fred, you were saying that you remembered an episode of, was it a soap, that you had seen when you were younger?
Well, this goes off of an interview we did this week where we're doing interviews for the show, and Julio brought up Brazilian soap operas, and I had forgotten about this, but because they're very sort of eerie, they're sort of spooky.
Yeah.
And I lived in Brazil when I was a kid, and I remembered a soap opera where the ending of it, the finale, and it was like the series finale, was this woman running through the hills with the ashes of her kid, like in an urn. Mm-hmm. But it was a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget it. That imagery is like, I think Brazilian soap operas were just, they have like a sort of obsession with death.
Yeah. And I remember a scene from a Brazilian soap opera that my mom would watch where a man was in love with the moon, but you didn't know that he was in love with the moon. All you knew is that he had to be locked whenever there was a full moon. And in the finale,
he had to be locked.
He had to be locked in a basement when there was a full moon. And in the finale, there's a full moon and you see him floating up to the moon
but he's being held to earth via a rope that he tied around his waist. So he has this rope because he knows that he might float away to his love, the moon. And this is sort of the equivalent to them, I think, to like an airplane crashing in the Grey's Anatomy hospital.
Yeah.
You know? Like the juicy finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the finale then you're talking about?
It felt like the finale, yeah.
And you called them telenovelas.
Well, I don't know if I'm using that term because telenovela is, I've only heard that used for like Mexican soap operas. So I don't know that Brazilians would call them telenovelas.
We call them novelas. We didn't have the tele in front of it.
Even though they were
being Venezuelans.
People in Brazil. I mean, they were just called.
Oh, there you
in
go.
In conversation, they were called novelas.
Then there you go. Wait, no, you're right. It's just novelas.
Oh, okay, okay.
The tele is implied.
Yeah.
If you're saying you're watching it, you know you're not reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to put the tele in front of it.
Yeah, all realization.
Although I remember hearing telenovela.
In English or in Spanish?
In my house. My nanny would watch telenovelas.
And this conversation was taking place in Spanish.
Yes. But maybe because they thought I didn't know they were watching it on the TV, they had to clarify.
Maybe. But now
you're a kid.
But now I'm getting conflicting answers from
Because a novella is a book. A novella is a short book.
It's a short, but that's a whole different thing.
There's so many different mediums out there. Could be the difference
of countries, too.
Yeah.
You know?
This is a poetry, there's music,
mm-hmm.
a painting, which there's abstract painting, there's figurative painting.
Surrealist. Yeah.
This is such a cool premise for a show, especially airing on HBO. It's 95% in Spanish. What was it like to sort of pitch that idea and to have it go through the process of getting this made?
The pitch was, it was as it is now, as the show is, that it's in Spanish and it's about these people. I mean, I originally was set in Mexico City, mm-hmm. and it was just an idea that I just wanted sort of out of my system. And I was thinking maybe it would be HBO Latino or something, and they were receptive to it. Amy Gravitt over at HBO, as is, they had no questions about it being in Spanish. To be honest, I think that that's what they liked about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that more than a detriment, they were sort of into that idea that it would be in another language.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like when we get the question about whether there was hesitation or not, everyone is pleasantly surprised that there was no hesitation mm-hmm. from HBO to make it in Spanish. So it's almost like everyone is like, well, I'm okay with it, but are there people okay
were
with it?
Were they okay with
and
it?
And then you're slowly realizing, oh, we're all okay with it.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful moment, I think, when they're like, oh, I guess no one had a problem. Fred didn't have a problem pitching it.
Yeah.
They didn't have a problem hearing it. And I don't have a problem saying it. So I think we're all good.
Fred Armisen, straight to series.
Oh, yeah.
Straight to series.
I think you got the tattooed.
Yeah. Tattooed.
Straight to series. Straight to series.
Yeah.
Anna, you were working in finance before you got into comedy and you were putting out videos, but you wouldn't put your name on the videos. Is that true? Because you thought that like somebody who you were working
that.
With
yeah.
might...
Google
find out.
Yeah, I didn't want anyone to Google my name when I was applying to jobs and stuff out of school and see that I had these silly videos online because I wanted it to be taken seriously. I had a YouTube account that didn't have my name or nothing about me on it. And I had a blog, too, that I would write in like a character and maintain that, but like my name not on anything because I didn't want to be discovered. I didn't want to be caught.
What name did
Madam
you
make? Madam X.
My old YouTube account was Whale City, which I made when I was a teenager and would put music on it. And then I just maintained that. And then I had an account that was called Milk Hill that I would put videos on as well.
Milk Hill. I remember Milk Hill. TTT. Yeah. What did TTT stand for?
Tennessee's Top 10 Tappers or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. TTT, I remember. But I didn't realize your name wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once I started doing stand-up and was like, okay, I'm going to do this, so I have to put my name on things, I changed it. But
now I want followers.
Yeah.
Now I want people to know. Yeah, because you would want people to see it, obviously, but nobody from your professional life, I guess. Yeah.
So that was your equivalent to like embarrassing party pictures of like you making out with someone.
Yes, was
you
like,
know you know when they say like first rule of like job hunting, take away the pictures of you making out with someone at a party because they won't hire you. But
for me, it was these silly videos.
Silly videos, yeah.
And Julio, you got into stand up after college here.
Yeah.
And you were working as a tour guide for the New School?
One of my college jobs was working as a tour guide.
Were you good at it?
I was very bad at it. And you would think that because I'm a performer now, that would have meant that I was like a good tour guide. But those two parts of my brain never connected. They're two different highways to me, the tour guide and the comedy.
Uh-huh.
to the point where I was just so boring. And I couldn't wrap my mind around having to walk and talk because that felt so artificial. Especially the thing the tour guides do where they get, where they're like walking backwards and talking.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that felt so so forced. And it's like, I don't want this. I don't want this.
Wait, so would you walk and then stop and talk?
So, okay. So we would pick them up in the admissions building, right? And then we would walk to our first building. But I didn't like talking during that walk. So we would walk in silence. And then halfway through, out of the corner of my eye, I would always see this one building that would be like the midpoint. It, to me, that indicated that we were halfway done with our walk. So then I would stop, turn, and say, we're almost there, and then keep walking. They hated me.
Who hated you? The people taking the tour?
The people taking the tour, because it was like, oh my God.
You're not making me excited about the school.
How did you make this like liberal arts college in the center, thriving center of the Greenwich Village seem so boring? One time I gave a tour to Sofia Vergara and her son. It was like one-on-one, and I was so delighted to see that at this tour she was exactly what one would hope and expect from Sofia Vergara. Just like delightful charm. It was really like, oh my God, like down to her like walking away during a part of the tour, going to a fridge in the cafeteria and then offering me a Pepsi.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a generous and powerful move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was this pre-Pepsi deal?
I think, I think her eye naturally gravitated towards the Pepsi. Yeah, like a moth to a flame.
Uh-huh. Did you guys work together at SNL? Fred, when you went back to host, Julia, were you there at the time?
Yes.
Yeah, but we didn't. Did we do anything?
No, no. It was like my second or third show or something.
Got
like
it. That. So super early on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd met him before at SNL. We can't remember exactly when, but someone else was hosting. I don't remember what the bit was, but we did. Our first thing was like a little bit together, a little joke. I don't remember what it was. I'm sure it was great.
A casual little joke.
A casual little joke.
None of those stressful. Yeah.
No.
And not too advanced. Serious.
No, no serious, pressure. Stressful.
It's almost like a passport to say to the other person, we're both in comedy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just do that as a sort of like, hey, my brain works like this. Yours too? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, it doesn't always work. I've met comedy people and they've been like, what do you mean? That has happened to me too, where I'm like, oh, no, I was just doing a joke.
Where the bits are not compatible.
Sometimes the passport is not compatible with the other passport. That happens. And you need like an affidavit or something.
A little stamp.
Yeah. Oh, I felt that so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Especially doing stand-up.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Isn't that funny when that happens? Like, you have to
like,
say,
okay, well, we're not compatible like this. And that's okay. So and we can stop. We can drop the bit and just
talk. We can drop the bit and sit back and just appreciate each other's work in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to drop a bit in the middle of a stand-up show? And you're just like, this is not going well.
I think I'm too coward to do that.
Yeah,
I just stay the course.
Yeah, I just this is what I plan to do. I'm going to finish doing it.
Yeah.
And also, if you don't like it, that's too bad.
And if you don't like it, the door is out there. And guess what? It's 2019.
I do the same. I just get through it. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I've done like corporate events where they're nice, but the volume and the speakers are so weird. I'm like, I'm going to wrap this up in a simple way. And not get into
because it's just not meant for a performance.
It's not meant for the nuance of stuff. So
one time I did a college show, like you know when they book you to do a.
We know what you mean.
We
didn't think you took a class.
And it was so far. It was in a small town in Virginia, and I remember the bus getting there was so long, and then I get there, and it's in a cafeteria. And I was booked to do 1 hour of comedy. And I do my first joke. People just stare at me. Then I do my second one. My jokes are very brief, by the way. I do my second one. Nothing. Then I look at the time and realize that I have 59 minutes left.
Oh, no.
And then I just look out the window and just truly just look at the stormy skies for a second. And just take a breather. And then just proceed to do 59 more minutes.
Great, in
silence. And then I just remember thinking about just like the carbon footprint of me being there.
Uh-huh.
Just how me being there made global warming a little close. Yeah. And then also just like, because when you do those things, they pay you pretty well. They pay okay. And then thinking, this could have been scholarship money for one of these kids. Mm-hmm. And then just feeling so mortified. and then cashing in that check.
And feeling so good.
And feeling so good.
But do you know, it might have gone better than you think. Maybe those students. Well, how did they look on their face?
Oh, no, I know what you think. I know where you're getting at. You're wondering, were they like smiling and taking it in, but it was a weird room to laugh at? No, they were passing out.
Wow.
They were falling asleep. There was maybe one table that was actually enjoying it. And then, what's worse is that because, for better or worse, this is a significant moment to a campus that doesn't get much action. At the end of it, they're like, can we get a picture with you? Oh, okay.
With a stormy sky in the background.
Don't be mean. Don't, like, when you put this up, don't be mean.
Yeah. No, I...
Guess who dared to show up?
Yeah.
Guess who had the nerve to come do an hour on our campus?
Yeah. Woof.
Well, you have a stand-up special coming out later in the summer.
Yeah, I taped that, and
HBO.
That's a special.
Great.
No, it's a...
Fred, your stand-up special was fantastic.
Thank you.
For drummers.
Yeah, thanks.
Love it. Anna, when you get your special, come back and promote.
I look forward to the campaign.
Yeah, you're going to be campaigning hard for that special.
Please, it's so unique.
It's very
put your name on it, though.
Yes.
We want people to know it's you. Well, guys, thanks so much for sticking around and taking
a few
more questions.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And congrats on the show.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.